Coda. This is the first day of the Human Rights Day retreat 2018. And we had rain last night. I suspect most of you were so fast asleep you didn't hear it. So last night I quoted from a lovely piece "Wherever I go, I leave no trace. Whatever I do, I am free." It's a line from a very famous story called Xing Yuan's Sound of Bamboo, a famous Zen story. One day, Xing Yuan was cutting weeds when he knocked a piece of tile against a bamboo. Hearing the sound, he was suddenly enlightened. That easy. That's terrifying. Hearing the sound, Xing Jian was suddenly enlightened. He composed a verse, "A single tok, all prior knowledge forgotten." This is not the result of practice. Daily activities proclaim the ancient way. No more falling into passive stillness. "Wherever I go, I leave no trace. Whatever I do, I am free." That wonderfully describes the tone of our practice, of our Zen practice. The sense that in the end, it comes down to something astoundingly ordinary. The knock of a stone against a bamboo. The creak of a chair. The call of a bird. The sound of our feet along the road. Quiet in the room. In what we look at as our normal life, our common misery, as someone put it. What was Maslow's phrase? Something of sort of a paranoid normality or something. I'll get it for you tomorrow. In that kind of life, we have a strong sense that we are, an accurate sense, I suggest, that we are kind of obsessed with ourselves. We're referring everything to ourselves, to our sense of who we are, our sense of self, our image of ourself. So we create, or try to create as best we can, a life that is feels like home, that is comforting, as comfortable as we're able to make it, as unthreatening, as familiar as we can. And in that process, we are very vigilant and awake in that kind of, in that terrain. We are keeping our sense of familiarity intact, our sense of home. We're creating a nest for ourselves. And we line it with things that appear to reassure us. the friends, the little routines, where I put my tea bag, how my books stack up beside my bed, whether I go for runs or walks or watch television, whatever it may be, we create this kind of life for ourselves. And it appears to be quite a benign activity. And in one sense, it is. But inevitably, alongside that, as we line this little nest with what feels as comfortable as we can be, alongside that, there is the sense of threat, of the potential that things could go wrong at any moment. And most of us have lived long enough to know that things do go wrong at any moment. Not every moment, but certainly any moment. And so we are anxious, so we are fearful, so we reject things in some measure or other that are threatening our nest. And there's a kind of fundamental anxiety about it, that we're always on the lookout for something that's going to threaten this nest. So the nest becomes lined with lined with self, if you like. We try and protect it and make it as comfortable as possible. And the more comfortable and particular we make it, the more it is under threat from the world at large, from the passage of time, from the decaying of our bodies, and the weather, the politics, the state of hospitals, the internet, Instagrams and things. And below it, for those who have a philosophical bent, this kind of endless busyness with self is itself fundamentally anxious, because it has a sense that this self is groundless. That this self is not the whole story. And as long as there's a sense of me not knowing the wider story, there's always going to be some measure of anxiety. And so we live this normal life. It's not an unpleasant place always. There's television, books, spouses sometimes, children, of course. But there's a sense in it that that we are operating often in one pole of a duality, one part of a set of opposites, that we're trying to have things under control in a very particular way, even if we think we're being quite sophisticated and zenish about it. But there's always this threat of the other. In traditional Buddhist language, we talk of clinging and aversion. And the aversion follows from the clinging. We try and make a home for ourselves and we reject or push away or actively hate or fear that which threatens it. Or the third of the Buddhist characteristics of normal life, we distract ourselves. It's called ignorance. So instead of looking at all this, we just switch on the remote. And at least the pain of having to deal with the clinging and aversion is postponed. Worth a shot, I mean, for goodness sake. So there is this life that we call our normal life, but there's a sense of restlessness that often comes to us maybe in our quiet moments, you know, when we're deeply touched or lonely or fearful. A sense that we can't really find the real ground, that the real ground to stand on. That somehow I'm involved in a game or an activity that isn't quite hitting the mark. That's the sense we sometimes get from it. And alongside that, there are moments when we recognize something fundamental in our lives that touches us in a different way, that feels more complete, if you like, feels more like my real home. And in this whole dynamic, there can be a sense of longing that arises. A very deep longing. A longing that isn't reduced or diminished by our not being able to express it or understand it in any way. Almost the opposite. The very fact that we can't control it verbally or intellectually gives us a sense that there's something beyond this game, something beyond this to and fro of this life that revolves around ourself, what we normally understand by self. And I'd like to suggest that taking up a spiritual practice, like Zen practice, is an answer to that kind of longing. That it's not just arbitrary, although it may feel like it at the moment. It's a deeply held, no, not a deeply held, it's a deep response to some kind of fundamental question that is arising, some longing, some yearning. That brings us here, that allows us to sit behind trucks on the N1 for 8 hours and arrive in the dark in the middle of nowhere. And lie on our own in new beds with new sounds around us, new food, new routine. The astonishment of finding yourself in a room with 16 other people doing nothing. It really is bizarre. So we answer the call, we get here, and we may be very excited. That's one. We may be very excited, maybe thrilled at this opportunity, maybe just feeling a bit lost. I've always been nervous before a retreat, whether I'm a student or as a teacher. I'm always sort of a mixture of anxiety and excitement. Sometimes one more than the other. But since some of you have done other practice for years, some of you have been coming here for years, for some it's quite new. Those that have been here before, so last time I came back, it was much better. I sat so nicely last time. He was so friendly, you know. Person next to me didn't sniff. Or if you haven't been here before, these people are mad, you know. They just sit still. They both bow at each other all the time, and they rush around when the bell rings and put on these strange clothes. All of this sort of stuff. It feels odd, and they chant in this odd manner, and they're lighting candles and so on. So there's this, for everybody in some degree, there's some sense of really lack of familiarity. And sometimes a strong judgment, sometimes judging oneself, sometimes judging others, sometimes just feeling at sea, sometimes feeling excited out of your boots. I think that willingness to not be in one's comfortable space is part of this stepping into a wider life. Our very not knowing, our very at-sea-ness, the unfamiliarity, our embracing of that and committing ourselves to just being willing to live with that is itself a step out of this cozy nest into something wider. It's a kind of an anarchistic step, which is always exciting. Sort of. It's taking of one pole of the life that is trying to protect itself and create a nice home, into a life of homelessness in a way. A life as a Jewish friend of mine always says, I become the wandering Jew again. I become the wandering Jew again. And our willingness to do that has already relieved some of the tension of, is it safe? Is it nice? Will I like it? Is it comfortable? Is it reassuring? All of that sort of anxiety that is part of our life of self. As we take even just small steps into something larger and wider, we are already opening our life. The fist that we keep so tight, it just begins to open. And as that little verse at the beginning shows us, that stepping into this life manifests itself in very concrete, ordinary ways, very real ways. You're listening while I'm talking. My talking amid your listening, the creak of a chair, a little excitement in your chest, a fearfulness. All of these moments, whatever they are, become part of our life, so that there's no outside . And within that, however much it takes from our self to just follow the retreat life, however much it takes of us to pitch up on time and to sit still and to respect each other and so on, however much it takes, that is the kind of doorway that we are part of. Doorway that we are walking through together. And instead of trying to build a home on one side of the river, or even trying to build a home on the other side of the river, which is just the same thing in a different place. Those of you that love retreat practice know what I'm talking about. Instead of that, we have a sense that we're like ferry people, anyway, whatever, politically correct. So we can go from one shore to the other freely. We can carry people. We can just enjoy the reflections in the water and the great blue sky above. And the great friendship that comes with that. In a fundamental way, in a very strong human way, our affection to each other, however unstated or understated it may be, is our practice. It is the mark of our practice. And having Tejado Osho as our host is an extraordinary manifestation of that affection. And her utter chaos in manifesting it is part of it. She messes up bookings and she drops watermelons and she, I don't know. List is a long one. There's just no judgment in that kind of friendship. And that's our practice. So, thank you for coming. May you have a wonderful week. Today there won't be interviews. We're just going to sit together. Okay, we're going to build up some krach. And for those especially that have got older since they last sat, or bodies are feeling a bit more broken, or who are unused to sitting so much, we can have a look at your sitting postures. So just, I'm not sure how formally to do it, but maybe you want to do it now.
In the walking period, if there's anybody who wants help, then you can help them while we walk.
Okay. Okay. So I'll hand you over to Margie at Tejada. She was recognized as a teacher in Furnas Mountain when we were there in October last year. And so that's another story. I'll tell you later when she's gone. But she'll take over the morning schedule. And perhaps if anybody would just like to chat, she'll start by going on a walk. And if anybody wants to just talk about their posture during that time, I'll stay behind. And if you want to use anybody else to talk about your posture, you're very welcome. Some of you have been working a long time, sitting a long time. Christine's in charge of the Zendo. She'll also help if you need. Thank you very much.